Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Keeper by Amy Nicole Walker, narrated by Lance West. Chapter 1.
You're doing it again, Reuben admonished softly. Sorry, Keegan stilled and exhaled a heavy sigh. I'm just so nervous.
Reuben kept his gaze on the magazine. He'd been staring at the same page for the past 15 minutes, but hadn't read a single word. Keegan wasn't the only nervous Nelly in the waiting room at the prosecutor's office. Reuben just didn't want to untangle his emotions until he was alone in his cabin.
I've never seen anyone's legs bounce like that. It's been 9 months since the arrests, Keegan said. Why call us in for a meeting now?
Your knees started out like twin kangaroos hopping in tandem, but somehow got out of rhythm. Your right leg bounced higher and faster than the left. How is that even possible? Keegan released a cute little growl of frustration.
Are you listening to a single word I've said?
Reuben lowered the magazine and turned to face his friend. The hazel eyes, snapping with irritation, were much preferred to the lifeless gaze Keegan wore 9 months ago. Full, rosy cheeks filled out his previously gaunt face, and cinnamon freckles dusted sun-kissed skin that had once been sickly pale. The Walking Dead looked more alive than Keegan had when he first stepped onto the ranch. But Keegan's biggest transformations occurred under the skin and weren't visible to the naked eye. He'd dedicated himself to his recovery from the nightmares he'd endured during conversion therapy on the Salvation Anew compound, and Reuben didn't want Keegan to wade back into unnecessary weeds by obsessing over things he couldn't control, such as prosecuting the people who'd committed the crimes against him.
Seriously, man, were your knees racing or something?
Keegan's mouth parted on a gasp.
That's what you're worried about?
Well, no, Reuben said. I have bigger things on my mind. Keegan wasn't the only one who wanted Mick and Quentin Carson to stand trial sooner rather than later. Reuben had serious skin in the game, too. He quickly diverted his thoughts away from who he wanted to rub said flesh against, because the typical reaction wouldn't be welcome in public. He turned his magazine to face Keegan and pointed to a handsome guy with similar color hair and fade style.
Do you think I'd look good with those highlights? I'm kind of in a rut and I could use a refresh.
Keegan stared at him for several moments, his lips parted in disbelief before he snapped his mouth shut and shook his head.
I know what you're doing.
Reuben smiled and waggled his brows. And is it working? Keegan heaved an exasperated sigh.
Yes, I'll direct my questions to Prosecutor Lyndhurst instead of internalizing my worries and feeding my anxiety monster.
Reuben's heart swelled with pride.
On a scale of terror, are we talking about a gremlin or Godzilla here?
The exterior door opened before he could answer, and Keegan's eyes widened briefly. A frisson of awareness licked a path up Reuben's spine like a lover's tongue, and his nerve endings sizzled like bacon in a hot skillet. He knew who entered the waiting room before the faint hints of lime and mint tickled his senses. Seth Burke's body wash reminded Reuben of a mojito, and the man himself was much more intoxicating than white rum. And he should know, since he was still hungover 9 months later, after their wild and reckless weekend together.
Good morning, Phaedra. I'm here to see Prosecutor Lyndhurst.
The sheriff's rich voice triggered memories of Seth's weight pressing him into the mattress and whispering dirty talk in his ear to spur him to climax when Reuben had wanted to delay the tide of pleasure. The sensory overload punted him back 9 months to the rustic cabin they'd hidden away in after Reuben survived a near-death experience and Seth thwarted a homegrown terrorist plot. A relationship between a sheriff and a victim or potential trial witness was off-limits. Seth had made that clear when they'd parted ways early on the Monday after. But the longing in his gray eyes after their last shared kiss spoke louder than words ever could. Reuben had understood the stakes and didn't want to see Mick and Quentin Carson walk free on a technicality, or have a jury reach a not guilty verdict because they couldn't trust the investigators. So Reuben planted his desires deep into a fertile garden of hope and tended to it with memories from that one perfect weekend whenever his soul needed TLC. Phaedra was in her early 30s and peered at Seth with cartoon character heart eyes. Reuben couldn't blame her, but he wanted to growl out a warning for the lady to back away from his man.
"Mr. Lyndhurst is wrapping up a phone call and shouldn't be much longer."
That was the same thing she'd told them almost 20 minutes ago. But Reuben embraced his annoyance to avoid engaging other emotions. The prosecutor's office was not an appropriate place to let his fantasies of Seth run rampant. He rattled his magazine to pull Keegan's attention back to the photo of the cutie with the sun-kissed streaks in his hair. "Highlights, yes or no?" Keegan darted a glance in Burke's direction before meeting Reuben's gaze.
"I think a change would do you good."
All the guys on the ranch knew about his weekend with Seth, but Reuben only discussed the torturous war waging inside him with Keegan. To want someone so badly and connect with them on the deepest levels only to have them ripped away was a cruel punishment to pay for someone else's crimes. Salvation Anew's plans and attacks had affected everyone on the ranch, but Keegan and Reuben had taken the brunt of their rage. The two of them had bonded over their shared experiences and the fact that they were the only two unattached people living on Redemption Ridge. Keegan's therapist didn't want him dating until he'd worked deeper into his recovery process, and Reuben couldn't have the only man he wanted. Cocking his head to the side, Key studied the magazine page for a second.
"Maybe caramel highlights for a more natural look."
His lips quivered and curved into a wry smile.
"Unless boy band member is the style you're going for."
Reuben reached over and ruffled Keegan's hair.
"Caramel highlights it is. 25 is too old for a boy band, though I have the moves to pull it off."
His best friend snorted in disagreement, and Reuben lightly swatted Keegan with the magazine before putting it back on the table. Seth's allure called him like a siren's song, but he avoided looking in his direction. But why? Running into one another in a small town was unavoidable. Reuben had always kept a tight leash on his emotions and offered Seth a cordial nod whenever their paths crossed. Seth would return the gesture with the slightest hint of a smile curving his lips. The sheriff's mirrored glasses hid the intensity in his gaze, but Reuben felt it as strongly as a lover's caress. He risked a glance in Seth's direction and noticed he'd taken the farthest seat away from them and had busied himself with his phone. Nothing about Seth's rigid posture resembled the affectionate man from his memories. For a moment, Reuben started to wonder if the echoes of shared laughter, kisses, and lovemaking were figments of his imagination instead of legitimate recollections. Several more minutes ticked by, with no relief from the rising tension in the room. Reuben's gaze kept darting to the corner to clock Seth's activity.
"Look up. Look at me. Just once."
When Keegan's legs started to bounce again, Reuben yanked his head out of his ass and placed a hand on his friend's knee. The shaking stopped immediately, and Keegan took a ragged breath.
"I'll find out how much longer," Reuben said.
But before he could stand up, the interior door next to the clerk's window opened. A woman, dressed in a smart navy suit and matching pumps, smiled at Reuben and Keegan. She wore her black hair in a sleek bun that accentuated her amazing bone structure. Full lips curved into a professional smile.
"Mr. Sanchez and Mr. Scott?"
They stood up and introduced themselves and shook her hand.
I'm Cynthia Daly, Mr. Lyndhurst's assistant. I apologize for the delay, but he's ready to see you now.
Reuben held out hope for a few seconds that Seth was having a separate meeting with the prosecutor, but that fizzled out when she looked to the corner of the room where he sat.
Join us, please, Sheriff Burke.
Keegan darted a worried glance in Reuben's direction, and he responded with a reassuring wink. Reuben imagined the meeting would take place in a large conference room where they could spread out, and he wouldn't have the walking mojito within licking distance. Reuben fell in behind Cynthia, and Keegan followed closely. Seth brought up the rear, a thought he didn't allow himself to explore for fear of tripping over his feet.
Normally, we'd use the conference room, but the clerks have turned it into a war room to prep for an upcoming trial, Cynthia said. I'll bring in an extra chair for the sheriff.
I can come back and meet with Tony later, Seth offered.
He's leaving after this meeting, I'm afraid. Cynthia stopped next to an open door and gestured for Reuben to enter.
Tony Lyndhurst rose to his feet and greeted him with a pleasant smile. He extended his hand and formally introduced himself. He had medium brown hair with a smattering of gray at the temples, hawk-like blue eyes, and the complexion of someone who spent way too much time indoors.
It's good to meet you, sir. I'm Reuben Sanchez.
He dropped his hand and moved over so Keegan could meet the man. Reuben turned his head just enough to see Burke in his periphery. The object of his desire stood in the doorway, chatting to Cynthia in a low voice. Once Lyndhurst finished up his greeting to Keegan, Reuben could parse some of the conversation.
What time tomorrow? Cynthia asked.
6 o'clock,
Seth replied.
I'll be there. You go on in, and I'll grab the chair.
Had he just overheard Seth and Cynthia making a date? Was Seth attracted to women, too? They'd talked a lot between bouts of scorching, passionate sex, but they kept their discussions light and their discoveries sensual. The meeting with the prosecutor took on a new sense of urgency, and Reuben fought the urge not to turn around and glare a warning in Cynthia's direction. Reuben tried not to stare when Seth entered the room and extended his hand to Lyndhurst. He stared at the lineup of personal photographs on the credenza behind the prosecutor's desk. Each candid shot portrayed a life well loved and lived, so it was easy to ignore the men who greeted one another. Their amiable tones and usage of first names implied a casual relationship between the county's top cop and chief prosecutor. Luckily, they didn't break into small talk while waiting for the lovely Cynthia's return. It already felt like someone was tap dancing on his last nerve, so the last thing Reuben wanted to hear was their golf scores or fishing stories. Did Seth play golf or fish? There was still so much to discover about Seth, and he found the idea thrilling. Reuben wanted to know him better than anyone else. He longed for the day when Seth realized he was the keeper. Not just a keeper, because that implied Reuben would be one of many key people in Seth's life when he wanted to be the one. Reuben discreetly studied Seth from the corner of his eye and repressed the sappy, lovesick sigh building in his chest. He didn't know what brand of jeans the man preferred, but the dark denim was made to hug that fine ass. The khaki shirt stretched across broad shoulders was crisp perfection, and Reuben knew from personal experience that the fabric was much softer than it looked. Hell, he'd even borrowed the shirt, or one like it, when he'd left the bed long enough to retrieve drinks from the refrigerator. Reuben had lifted the shirt collar to his face and inhaled the lime and mint embedded into the fabric. It had made Reuben want to slurp a mojito from his belly button. Seth didn't have any of those ingredients, but he'd encouraged Reuben to use his tongue wherever, whenever, and however he chose. Absence didn't just make the heart grow fonder, it made the libido get hornier. A mournful sigh slipped past his defenses, and he disguised it with a light cough.
"Do you need something to drink, Mr. Sanchez?" Lyndhurst asked.
"No, but thank you."
Reuben thought the cough might have gotten Seth's attention and dared to look in his direction, but Seth averted his gaze to the phone in his hand. The man could draw that bastard from his pocket quicker than a gunslinger at high noon. Reuben tamped down his disappointment and forced his attention back to the prosecutor.
"How about you, Mr. Scott?" Lyndhurst asked.
Keegan also declined the offer before turning a wry gaze Reuben's way. The cough hadn't fooled him one bit.
"Nice rebound," he whispered.
Reuben shot him a wink and then gazed around the room. Heavy wood furniture with a dark finish took up nearly the entire space. Someone had polished the surfaces to a shine, which probably accounted for the hints of lemon Reuben smelled in the air. The office was much smaller than he'd have guessed, but it was three times the size of the broom closet Reuben's public defender had called an office. He'd known he was fucked the moment he saw the card table and folding chairs his attorney used. Cynthia still hadn't returned by the time he finished his perusal. Just how far did she have to go to find an extra chair? Lyndhurst must have shared a similar wavelength because he walked to the door and peered into the hallway.
"Ah, here she comes," he said. "Sorry, I got stopped a few times before I could get back here."
Probably from war-waging clerks in the conference room. Cynthia wheeled the chair into the room and stepped back.
"Let me know if you need anything else."
The only spots big enough for Seth to sit were behind Lyndhurst's desk with the prosecutor or in the corner diagonally from Reuben. Either spot would put him directly in Seth's line of sight. It probably surprised no one when the sheriff parked his broad shoulders in the corner to give his brawny frame extra space. Reuben looked in his direction, but Seth stared down at the floor.
"Look at me, please."
When Seth didn't yield to his silent please, Reuben forced his attention to Lyndhurst. The older man leaned back in his chair and smiled in what Reuben assumed was supposed to be a fatherly manner to put them at ease. He couldn't remember his father, so he wouldn't know, and Lyndhurst's expression only made him more anxious. Keegan's legs started bouncing again, and Reuben placed his hand on the closest knee and left it there. It seemed Lyndhurst's smile didn't relax his friend either. The prosecutor's gaze dropped to Reuben's hand on Keegan's knee. A slight furrow formed on his brow, and the smile morphed from paternal to patronizing.
"You two obviously know one another, and I assume you've both met Sheriff Burke."
Keegan verbally confirmed their past introduction while Reuben nodded.
"I've interviewed Mr. Scott and Mr. Sanchez multiple times during my investigation."
Seth's professional tone held none of the warmth Reuben remembered from their weekend together. He sounded cold and indifferent and continued to avoid Reuben's gaze. If Seth wasn't looking at the prosecutor or at his feet, he stared at a spot on the wall between Keegan's and Reuben's heads. From Lyndhurst's angle, it would appear Seth was making eye contact with the witnesses.
"Look at me, damn it!"
Nothing. What the hell was going on? It was one thing to pretend they didn't know each other intimately, but Seth seemed almost hostile toward him.
"I think the best thing to do is get right to the point," Lyndhurst said. "First, I want to apologize for my lack of communication over the past 9 months. Based on the strength of our evidence, I expected the Carsons to accept plea bargains instead of going to trial. Their defense attorneys had seemed keen when I presented the offers, but they quickly came back with rejections after talking to their clients. That's no excuse for my poor communication, but I want you to know your best interests have been at the forefront of my mind the entire time."
"How so?"
Keegan's voice was clear and calm, showing no signs of the wounded man who'd arrived at the ranch not that long ago. Lyndhurst's brow arched, and he cocked his head to the side.
"Pardon?
How did you have our best interests at heart when you never asked us what we wanted?"
I...
Keegan didn't wait for him to finish his answer before pressing forward. "And if your evidence is so solid, why would you want to offer a plea bargain?"
Reuben was so proud of his friend and gave his leg an assuring pat. He thought the gesture earned a slight tick in Seth's jaw, but figured it was just wishful thinking on his part.
Lyndhurst's brow eased back down, and he offered a disarming smile.
"You ask excellent questions."
The fatherly smile returned, and Reuben braced himself for dad-splaining. If the guy referred to either of them as son, Reuben would immediately leave.
"Daddy issues, anyone?"
"We want the Carsons to help us locate the two members of Salvation Anew we've been unable to find."
Keegan called them Brother Cain and Brother Abel, and just the reference to them made his best friend shiver.
"A plea agreement provides a good incentive for them to help us. It also means swifter justice and avoiding a long, costly, and potentially embarrassing trial."
A flush crept up Keegan's neck, and he narrowed his eyes.
"Embarrassing for who? You surely don't mean me. I'm the victim. Nothing I did deserved their cruel treatment."
Lyndhurst shook his head and held up his hands, palms out.
"Of course not. I misspoke. Triggering is a better term than embarrassing. The testimony might cause you undue harm."
"That is what I have a therapist for, Mr. Lyndhurst, which you would have known if you'd discussed the situation with me. I think you're more concerned about seating jury members who secretly agree that being gay is wrong and won't take their crimes against me seriously."
"No, no, son. Don't put words in my mouth."
Reuben rose to his feet and claimed Seth's attention for the first time. Gray eyes the color of a winter storm widened slightly before he lowered his gaze again.
"Let's get out of here. This guy kept us waiting for nearly 30 minutes, and it's clear he doesn't care how we feel."
Reuben applied the latter part to Seth, too. Keegan stood up, but they hadn't taken a single step before Lyndhurst shot to his feet.
"Please stay," the prosecutor said. "I've botched this completely, and I apologize."
He gestured to the seats in front of his desk.
"Won't you sit?"
Reuben and Keegan locked eyes for a few seconds before reclaiming the chairs. Lyndhurst exhaled a long breath.
"Thank you."
He placed his elbows on the desk and steepled his hands, then tapped his forefingers against his chin a few times as he studied them.
"I do care very much about what happened to you, and getting justice for what the Carsons put you through. Mr. Scott, I'm very glad you're getting therapy, and feel prepared to listen to testimony or possibly offer it during the trial. But the defense attorneys will be brutal. They're going to say a lot of harsh things to cast their clients in a better light."
"You mean like shifting the blame to me? I didn't enter that compound of my own free will. My options were to join my mother or lose everything. My family, my home, and my financial support. But even if I had joined freely, I never consented to the barbaric physical, mental, and sexual abuse they inflicted upon me. I will stand before anyone and speak my truth because I have nothing to be ashamed of, sir."
Reuben reached for Keegan's hand and squeezed it. His boo had grown up and was well on his way to being a fierce badass.
Keegan rotated his wrist and laced their fingers together so Reuben felt the slight tremor ripple through him. Keegan's boldness had come at a price, but that only made Reuben prouder.
Lyndhurst studied Keegan for several moments before he nodded. "I underestimated you."
"Most people do. That's my superpower."
"You'll need to use that to your advantage, if or when you take the stand."
The prosecutor held his hand up before Keegan could respond.
"If I get the chance to put the Carsons away for a long time through a plea deal, I'm going to take it. That's the best possible outcome for all involved. This office, the taxpayers, and both of you. I wear many hats and answer to many people, and I promise that I'm taking your concerns seriously."
You can at least keep them informed about what's happening.
Seth's rich voice drew Reuben's attention like a magnet, and he missed the prosecutor's response.
Seth nodded curtly at Lyndhurst and kept his gaze there.
That's good enough for me, Keegan said.
Reuben forced his gaze back to the prosecutor. He wasn't sure he trusted Lyndhurst, but Seth approved of his response, and so had Keegan.
For me as well.
Lyndhurst huffed a sigh.
Good, because if we can't reach a plea agreement with the defendants, this case could drag out for another 2 or 3 years.
Reuben's heart lurched, and his mouth gaped open in shock. He darted a helpless glance at Seth, urging him to do something, and this time Reuben saw a definite tick in his jaw. The sexy sentinel in the corner offered nothing, no assurances or comfort, just nothing. That minuscule negative reaction was the only animation in his stony visage. There was no doubt Seth would prefer swift justice, but Reuben hoped the disappointment was more personal than professional.
2 or 3 years, Keegan whispered.
That's common in high-profile cases like this one. The Carsons have excellent representation, and I anticipate the first volley of filings to delay the proceedings soon.
Why?
Reuben asked.
We have preliminary and evidentiary proceedings on the docket for next month. There is a bevy of reasons they could file for continuations, and I expect they'll exploit them all before we get to jury selection.
But 2 or 3 years?
Keegan repeated. Lyndhurst nodded.
We want a piece of the Carsons. Our attorney general wants to take a swing at them, and the federal prosecutors are salivating to get a chance also. You've got 3 different court systems jockeying for position. There's a lot going on, which plays into the defense's hands. All they have to do is keep filing motions to delay the hearings and trials.
Christ, Keegan said.
Seth raised his arm and rubbed the back of his neck, but continued to ice Reuben out.
So, what happens next?
Reuben asked.
We prepare like there will be a trial, Lyndhurst said. At some point, we will begin prepping witnesses.
The prosecutor explained Reuben might not take the stand during the trial, since he didn't see Quentin Carson cut the brake lines on the truck. They would rely on physical evidence and Keegan's testimony to tie him to that crime.
You would likely only address the court during the punishment phase if a jury convicts the Carsons.
When, not if,
Reuben corrected.
Lyndhurst smiled and nodded.
I like your confidence, Mr. Sanchez.
I don't know how to be any other way, sir.
Mr. Scott, your testimony will be integral to our prosecution, so we will spend a lot of time prepping you for trial.
How will you do that? Keegan asked.
My clerks will run a mock trial to prepare you for the questions we'll ask during your testimony and those we predict the defense will pose during cross-examination. They'll want to blast holes in your testimony by any means necessary. They will imply, through questioning, that you consented to that heinous abuse, and they will also suggest another party coerced you into lying about Salvation Anew's activities.
Coerced by who?
Keegan asked in disbelief. Lyndhurst glanced at their joined hands and said,
It's clear you're close to the guys on Redemption Ridge. You live there now, correct?
When Keegan nodded, he continued,
They will try to twist your actions as proof you were desperate to fit in somewhere. You were weak and vulnerable, and Cash Sweeney and his crew took advantage.
Keegan lunged to his feet.
That is not what happened!
Lyndhurst threw up his hands and patted the air in the classic gesture that never really calmed anyone down.
We know that, Mr. Scott. And I will do everything in my power to make sure the jury has to strike these nonsensical things from the record, but they can't unhear things. They might not admit that stricken testimony is factored in their verdict, but it could be. It is my job to dissect even the tiniest details of this case and prepare for every eventuality. The defense will do their best.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?